Good. Okay. Well, welcome. This is the City of South Jordan study meeting. Today is Tuesday, October 15th, 2024. We welcome you in our new configuration. And the greatest benefit, I think, to this setup is that we can see each other.
Yes.
We can see each other and we can see all of you. And so we'll look forward to this and see how it goes. My name is Dawn Ramsey. I'm the mayor of the City of South Jordan, and I feel like I don't know where to look now. So this is there's going to be a learning curve. No, I'm not going to look at that. It's good. Look at who's here. Thank you. But I'll look at who's here, and we'll figure it out. But appreciate our outstanding city council who are all here with us. We've got our senior administrative staff here with us. We appreciate all of you. We've got some guests here with us. I don't know that we have any members of the public here yet, do we? I can't see any yet, but I think we have some probably coming. So we welcome any who are here or joining us later or who may watch this later. We welcome each of you and appreciate you being part of our meeting tonight. We're going to open tonight with an invocation by Councilmember Don Shelton.
Our Father in heaven, we come before thee this evening as we begin our council study session and pray that thy spirit will be with us and help us to be wise as we consider the needs and important matters of our city. We're thankful for each other and for the opportunity to work together. We're thankful for our form of government that allows us to participate. We're thankful for our administrative staff and for their expertise and dedication to helping us do the best job that we can. And we pray that thou bless them and their families. Please be with all of the city staff and bless them that they may be safe from harm as they perform their important responsibilities. We're thankful to be able to meet in such comfortable and convenient circumstances. And we're thankful for the food that we have to eat. I ask you to please bless it. And we say these things in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Mr. Shelton. Okay, item C, we have our mayor and council coordination. Anybody have anything you'd like to bring up?
Is there a WFRC meeting next week?
It is.
Or am I off?
It's coming up soon. It's in, I thought it was first part of November, but I might be there. Let's see.
Off
the top of their head what day that is.
Yeah, I'm not showing it on my calendar anymore.
That's odd.
We do have it. I know we have it coming up. And it is, we'll find a date. Yes, and appreciate you bringing that up because
I just found it.
It's the 28th.
It's the 28th, yes.
Okay.
It's because it says updated invitation now and not Sagemont Regional. Threw me off.
Yeah, there we go.
28th.
October, yeah.
And we're hosting that here at our public safety building. So encourage all of the council and the staff who would be there to please come. And we'll take our Sharpies and we'll make sure that we weigh in on this living document that is our plan. Okay, thank you. Anybody else have anything to coordinate? I have one. About, it's been what, probably half hour now? About a half hour ago, a press release went out announcing the generous gift, the donation being made by the Larry H. and Gail Miller Family Foundation in partnership with Salt Lake County to build a very beautiful new state-of-the-art performing arts center here in South Jordan.
Oh, hallelujah.
That's exciting. It's exciting. There's a few renderings with it that I'm happy to pull up and show you. You might have it. Check your email, and if you don't have it, let me know and I'll forward it to everybody. So that will be all over the news tonight, and Rachel had a good idea and said, let's film our own video right now. So we just filmed a quick video about that we'll put out. It is cool. It's exciting. This has been a long time coming. We worked for a long time with Salt Lake County to get that Performing Arts Center planned here in South Jordan, and the partnership has come together beautifully, and truly grateful for the Miller Family Foundation for a $25 million donation to get that built.
That's fantastic.
Right away. It will be part of the urban center. The location is very near the ballpark, not far from the ballpark.
Is it still in the library?
It's just east of the fire station, across the street from where the ballpark will be.
So they've moved it on some.
It's not by the library, then. It's moved north a little bit.
Okay.
Which is about.
Would you forward the email?
Yeah, it doesn't look like.
Yeah. Yep, I'll send it to you.
Thank you.
It's exciting and grateful for that. Wow. And so that was announced at the county council meeting this afternoon. Thank you.
Sorry.
No, that's okay. Thanks. It was announced at the county council meeting this afternoon, and it's a big deal. That's been a long time coming. Gosh, it's been so long in the works to make this happen that it's a monumental announcement for us here in the city. So very excited about that.
Great news.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have any kind of a, this will be built in the next 3 years, 2 years, 1 year?
They're working on the drawings now.
The intention
now,
is fast.
And the intention is to start to break ground and going on it soon.
So we have a ball field and a performing arts in 2025?
I don't know that they'll have that built that
okay.
quickly.
No.
It's probably closer
another,
to a two-year build.
Okay.
Probably 2 to 3 at this point.
Yeah.
A few
It'll
highlights.
It'll be part of the heart of downtown South Jordan for sure.
The upcoming Arts Center is in design with plans expected to include an 800-seat proscenium theater, offering a venue for small to mid-sized performing organizations. That is so notable. We have to bring 200 chairs into our community center right now. Like this, and this will be a community art space, the county, whatever. But if to put it in context, we bring 200 chairs into the Gale Center right now. Or not the Gale Center, I'm sorry, the
community center.
So 800-seat theater is a big deal.
Wow.
It will also feature a visual art gallery and classroom space dedicated to fostering creativity and learning. Groundbreaking is scheduled for January of 26, with the center expected to open in early 28. So I will forward this, the whole press release one, to all of you. And there are some images too, so I'll do that in just a minute. So that is exciting.
Yes.
It's exciting. I knew the announcement was coming out this week, but I didn't know for sure when. So when that came through, that's pretty exciting. It's good. Anybody else have anything to coordinate?
I just have a question. Melanie sent out some emails. So are we meeting on the 5th then?
No, that was a cancellation to remove it from your calendar.
Okay.
There are only two remaining council meetings the rest of the year. The one on the 19th of November is the only meeting in December, and then the one on...
Talk a little louder, Dustin.
Oh, two council meetings left the rest of the year, November 19th and December 3rd.
Okay, so the 5th is
the emails that you saw today was Melanie canceling the November 5th because it's election day, removing it from your calendar because it had been inadvertently.
That's what I thought, but when I clicked on the calendar, it still showed. And so I thought, well, maybe I don't understand. So I wanted to make sure that if I needed to show up, I would be here.
Yeah, no,
that's
no,
nice.
No meeting on the 5th. Enjoy election day.
So 19th
hope so.
That's it for the rest of this year.
Good clarification. Thank you. Yeah.
And on the meeting on the 19th, just so that you're aware, rather than trying to get you all assembled for our strategic budgeting, we'll be using the work session on the 19th to have our strategic budget discussion this year. I'm trying to save you one less meeting in the busy holidays.
I can't believe we're already talking about that. It seems
right.
Like we just...
We just went through it.
It's October 15th today.
It's ongoing.
The team has already started on next year's budget. They submitted all of their staffing reports and requests last week.
Okay.
So we are well underway.
Impressive.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay, unless anyone has anything else, we'll move on. For a discussion, just a quick review, a high-level review. We like to always do that in here and answer any questions that anyone may have if you've got some deeper dive questions on our regular council meeting. We have a public hearing on Ordinance 2024-22. It's vacating a municipal waterline easement in an area of Daybreak. Fairly straightforward.
Yeah, this is similar to many of the other vacations of easements that you've seen. They're just shifting this a few feet as they've developed things. They realize it needs to jump over, and that's all this is shifting that. So vacate one, record the new one.
Yeah. And John Warnick is going to try to be here tonight. He didn't have this on his calendar for some reason. I talked to him today, and he said, I'm so sorry I didn't have this on my calendar. Anyway, his family's got some stuff. He was running home. He was in heaven and earth. So, anybody has any questions for him? We've got a land use public hearing for the Whedon Acres, which is not the Whedon farm, the Whedon family farm. To be clear, this is not that at all.
Not at all.
So, the name is, like, makes us go, wait, what? You know, that's not what this is. So, yeah. Anyway, it's a public hearing on a resolution to be considered pertaining to property owned by Gordon. Is it owned by Gordon Miller Construction?
Gordon Mylar.
Gordon Mylar. That's right. Mylar. That's how you say it. I do know that. So anyway,
Director Schaefermeyer is on an airplane right now and will be landing shortly. He intends to give some background when he presents this, giving you a little bit of the history of flag lots and how we got to this point with this one. You should have received a couple of emails from the city recorder today of public comments that have been received about this, so make sure you take a look at those. But Stephen will give you a lot more background when he presents that item to you tonight to start that.
Quick question. I read through those public comments. Are those, I didn't stop and spend a ton of time. Are those residents that are adjacent to this?
Yes, these are people from that neighborhood.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Some opposed and some supportive. Yeah.
And there's a mix of support and opposition.
Okay. Do we expect some attendees tonight?
I would anticipate. There were several in attendance at the Planning Commission. I anticipate that several will be in attendance tonight.
Yeah, from that neighborhood, I would expect there to be people in attendance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we have public hearing on that tonight. And then that's it. I mean, there's a zoning ordinance related to the same thing. There's a development agreement, potentially, and a zoning ordinance, potentially. Those are both public hearings. So that is the end of that.
I wonder, Mayor, can I?
Yeah, go ahead.
I wonder, Mr. Luce, if you could just refresh my memory on when we created this flag lot zone. I
created this problem?
I'm sure I was there and part of it, but I just...
I'm happy to go through.
I don't remember.
That's part of what Dr. Schaefermeyer was.
But I can give you the version for this because he's going to do it and make sure we educate everybody. You'll remember we had a while back a flag lot ordinance that was basically administrative, but you either qualified for it or you didn't. Some people saw that, planned on moving in the city, acquired a lot, and between the time they moved in and the time they got here, we had changed that ordinance somewhat. It was a young couple, you might remember, Councilmember Shelton, about 3 years ago.
I do recall something like
that. We tightened the ordinance to fix problems we were having, and Director Schaefermeyer can describe all those if you ask him. He's got much better in his head. About tightening that ordinance, they acquired their lot, they came in, and they couldn't. And so they requested a text amendment change. But we as staff and you as council felt it was the right ordinance for most circumstances. So instead of changing the text, we created an overlay zone, which in those off circumstances where it would still work, but the administrative process wouldn't work, they could apply for a zone change, therefore leaving it to your legislative discretion. And that was kind of a safety net to catch circumstances like the one where I think the majority of the council at that time felt comfortable with that particular application, but wouldn't have felt comfortable changing back to the more broad administrative process. So that is why we created an overlay zone. So if you look at our code, we have entitled 16, the administrative process, where if you comply with that, you don't need to come to council, you can have a flag lot, the rules are a little tighter. And then Title 17, we have an overlay zone, or floating zone, I can't remember exactly, I think it's floating, isn't it? We have the floating zone, which if they don't comply with Title 16 administrative, now they can ask for legislative zoning, where then they would be able to create their lots, and that's why a development agreement goes with it, because then we determine everything by the agreement and we just report that way. So that's in a nutshell what happened. You might remember the young couple I think they're finally starting to move on their project.
Yeah, I think they're actually on an upcoming agenda.
Yeah. So you'll see this again. So that is why we have kind of two different ways to do the same.
So which items on here flagged us to have to do an amendment?
I don't think they complied. I think some of the lot specifications they didn't comply with.
Yeah,
but Steve, I think they broke that out.
They didn't comply with the overlay, but there's something about the frontage, if I remember it.
Yeah, well, yeah, there. I think it was the frontage. They didn't. They don't have enough frontage under our Title 16 administrative. But let's ask Director Schaefermeyer to be certain, because he's got it all mapped out.
Yeah, I couldn't figure out one thing. So I read that they didn't comply on everything.
Yeah.
But I couldn't ferret out what it was that they didn't.
I think it's
apply.
More than just the
well,
frontage.
I think it's fencing too. They don't want fence.
Yeah, they think it's some of the fencing thing. Exactly. And I know some of it was brought up in Planning Commission. I was there that night. We had public kind of on both sides, just like you're seeing in the public comment that's been mailed to you, emailed. So I'm sure it'll be a good discussion. The public was very respectful at Planning Commission. It was a pretty good showing of kind of both sides of perspective of how this impacts neighborhoods. ADUs, as you probably saw in the letters, were brought up that it's four homes, but it's really eight new units because of the way ADUs work. That's a concern. And
it's
so those are
concern.
Things. Yeah, those are all the things that you will hear tonight. Did that help answer the question?
It did. Thank you. I just side note, I had a conversation with Representative Tusher recently, and he was talking about maybe Pleasant Grove. I can't recall the city for sure. They made a presentation to the legislature or to a committee perhaps about how they were allowing ADUs to be sold as a separate unit.
That's up in Farmington.
It is Farmington. Mm-hmm. And I've got it here.
He was very impressed with that.
I've got it here.
Less impressed with that.
And I can see neighborhoods going up in arms.
Yeah, I don't.
So, could you do that on title?
I don't know.
They'd have to subdivide.
He actually sent me their presentation, a link for it.
Well, I've got it right here as a PDF.
Yeah.
I can send it to you all right now. I had Emily pull it for me a couple days ago.
Well, you know, the county will register anything. They'll take anything to do.
I'm not, though.
The supporter of selling ADUs.
Anyway, he thought it was a great idea.
He also indicated that he knew we were, and he might have indicated this to you, Council Member Sheldon, he knew we were talking short-term rentals, and he indicated that he thinks there'd be strong support for cities regulating short-term rentals in the legislature.
I told him I couldn't see any value in them at all from a city perspective.
Yeah. He indicated that.
Oh.
So,
well, they're robbing
that,
our taxes.
Yeah, exactly.
And we'll probably bring that back in the December meeting.
Okay, thank you. Anything else? Okay, so we're going to move on. We have a presentation. We love when Public Works comes. Thanks for being here, you guys. We are happy to welcome our Director of Public Works, Ray Garrison, Associate Director Joey Collins, and Supervising Senior Engineer Ken Short, and we have more than that here with us. We're going to invite our our Public Works team, everyone who you brought with you, go ahead and come on up. Yeah, I would love to have you come on up.
Oh,
yeah. Welcome to the hot seat. Yeah. We're nice. It's good. And we're going to talk about pavement preservation.
We walked up the stairs
to
get down
the spot.
We're friends
now. Oh, you do? I had a perfect time.
Because it costs so much money. So.
I love it because I drive on roads in some other cities. Love the job that South Georgia does.
Thank you. So I'll just introduce. You guys are pretty familiar with Joey Collins, Associate Director, and our Senior Engineer, Ken Short, but we bought our supervisors, our asphalt supervisors that help maintain our in-house operations, Edson Escalante and Wesley Slauson. they're new to these roles, but they bring a lot of experience, and I'm grateful to have them on the team. And you'll see a lot of the success we have with our pavement is because of them, and you'll see it in this presentation when Joey starts to share that. So we're excited to be here and talk about pavement preservation, talk about what we're doing in-house, what we're outsourcing, how roads get pavement treatments, what treatments they get, how we determine that, and also winter operations and how we handle those nasty potholes. Especially over the last few years, there's been a lot of media attention on potholes, and it's due to the extreme weather we've had. It really wrecks some havoc on our roads, and we see an increase of that. So with that being said, I'll turn the time over to Joey.
Well, yeah, first of all, thank you, Council and Mayor, for letting us come here and, you know, kind of brag about our guys and what's going on there. Like Ray said, I'll be covering kind of our in-house operations and what we're doing as far as public works, and then Ken will get into our outsource construction needs and what we're doing there and how we all meet together stuff. So yeah, we'll jump right in. Currently, our transportation network is 850 lane miles of asphalt and concrete, 42 of those miles coming in the last 4 years. So we've had some growth. On top of that, we also have about 20 miles of trails that these guys help maintain, doing all the maintenance there. When you see those mastic going across that and fixing all those cracks, that's these guys handling those.
This does not include the UDOT roads, is that correct? This is just the roads that we own, is that right?
Correct. This is just our own South Jordan City. So
when you talk about trails, are you talking only paved trails?
Correct.
Okay.
Yep. So yeah, so we have a lot to maintain, and these guys are doing a great job with it. I'm almost done. And these are just our in-house operations. And feel free to stop me. I know some of you guys have already heard this. You're probably pretty familiar, but if you have any questions, let me know. I'm going to start out with patching. That's our permanent fixes with hot asphalt mix. We have a patch truck that these guys go out with to permanently fix the potholes or cut out large areas that have damage to them or anything like that, or if we've had a water leak. These guys are taking care of those. Trench paving is a new tool in our toolbox. Thanks to these guys and their experience and what they bring to the table, we're able to utilize them and do some bigger, better projects that normally we would hire out.
Is that kind of like what you did on 114?
Correct. Yep. Yeah. I have some pictures in here about that. That's what they're crack sealing currently. So you're just fine. And then the regular maintenance of crack sealing, you know, trying to keep our good roads nice, keep the moisture out of there, keep it from the freeze thaw and everything. Mastic application, you know, crack seal, but with a little bit of aggregate in it, larger cracks, taking care of those. And then cape seals, GSB 88, we've talked about that before in here. These guys drive the truck, everything, spray it all out, get everything going. That's to keep our nice new roads nice still, kind of like a nice lotion over that asphalt. So jump into a little bit more of that maintenance strategy with the new knowledge that we have and the ability to run that trench paver. We're just capitalizing on these guys' experience and what they can do, and allowing them to take full advantage of that and make us better. And we'll show you how we've kind of advanced over the few years on what we're doing here. But repairing just the wheel pass, so obviously more of the wear and tear takes place in those roads. If we can do that with the trench paver and save some money and prolong that budget further, then we're gonna keep doing that. And that's what you guys saw on 114. So this is the square feet of patching and repairs that we've done compared to what our budget looks like. And thank you for, you know, allowing us to have more budget to provide things like this. And so we went from doing about 4,000 square feet a year in that repairs and patching up to over 20,000 now. And 2024 isn't finished yet. We're still going. So there's still some more to add there, but yeah, they're doing a lot. So definitely making it worth the money. And this is just the budget compared to the lane miles. Like I said, lane miles have gone up and our budget has matched that. And this is just our in-house transportation improvement budget in Class C. There's another section for the outsourced road maintenance as well in there. So this is just
extra money allocated to this really saves taxpayers in the long run quite a bit of money.
Absolutely.
By staying on top of these roads.
Yes, indeed. Yep. Yeah. Thinking about it. Oh, right. So this is just a picture of some of the patching they've been recently doing. This is stuff, like I said, that we would normally have outsourced just with the size of it, the how complex and the maintenance there is. So you can see down in the middle there, that's the trench paving. We started on 114th. That's as they cut it there, getting ready. But as you can see, they're large patches. They're not just little pothole patches. These are things that would take some serious amount of time. So thanks to these guys and their experience, we're able to utilize that and make it a little bit nicer. We like the quality control we have. So just thinking about it. And like I said, this is 114th there. You guys have probably seen it. Nice. And there's nice cones out there right now because these guys are finishing up that job as they've gone through. Now they're going in crack sealing those seals right there along the edges. So, and as you can see, the car right there, it's right in the wheel path. So where the maintenance or the wear and tear is normally taking place, we're eliminating those spots. But this thing likes to vibrate a lot. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's it. But yeah, they're doing a great job. And then thanks to the experience, like I said, it's allowed us to do that to where, you know, normally we'd be looking at this road as a complete, just overlay everything. Now we can look at it as, hey, let's repair these wheel paths, maybe come in with a micro or some other outsourced maintenance that's a little bit cheaper to save us some money. So stretching that dollar again. And this, no shock to anyone else. I mean, our materials are going up. There's about a 50% increase on, you know, asphalt per ton and the cold mix that we're using. And so, yeah. That's my repairs.
How does this compare to concrete right now?
Concrete's gone up a lot as well. Yeah. I'm not sure the exact number, but I know not outside of our, we were paying about 90 something a yard, and I think we're around 150 now.
Yeah. Around that. So, something like that.
Yeah.
On the outsourced side, I think the concrete's probably about four times the cost of asphalt.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It is a lot.
Go ahead. I have a question. On the asphalt, we buy our asphalt, I assume, right? I mean, we're not mixing our own.
No, we go buy it. We're going to, well, now it's Kilgore and
even
Geneva.
The cold mix, we buy that from a company that prepares it.
Yes. Yeah.
Wonder what the, and maybe this is just completely stupid, so just take it for what it's worth, but would it make any sense for us to invest in having that kind of equipment or that capability to make our own maybe cold mix or maybe small hot mix stuff. I don't know. I mean, maybe that's just an astronomical investment.
It's a lot of money. Mm-hmm.
I'm not exactly sure what that all entails, but it's stuff we're looking into.
Yeah, it's, you know, I have no information about it. I'm just floating that out.
Yeah.
That's an idea.
No, so you're wondering where the cost break is.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And I'll say one thing that we've challenged now that we have these two gentlemen in these roles, and they have all this experience, and we've got a few other employees from other neighboring cities that have experiences come to South Jordan. We're looking at other ideas of how we can, nothing's off the table, right, to see if there's other things that we can do in-house to bring that money in and stretch that dollar a little bit more. Some of it's equipment we might need and things like that. So we're evaluating everything to see what our options are. Some might not make sense, such as our mixing our own asphalt. But some might, and so we're going to look at that, and these guys, we're going to evaluate different options.
All right.
So like an example, when we brought up the 114, how long we had that traffic control up, that was a learning curve for us. You know, it was a new idea bringing this in-house, but it was also not having that right equipment. There's equipment that we can purchase, and we think we'll have a quick return on investment that can mill that quicker and get us in there and out of there a lot sooner. And so those are the kind of things that we're looking at.
Yeah. And like we said in the beginning, winter maintenance, we're battling those elements. We've had a few rough winters that have kind of opened our eyes on some of our troubled areas. And, you know, these guys have obviously seen it more than myself, but they're out there battling it every day. And like he said, these guys are open to any ideas. They're trying new products. They're trying different innovations and they brought out mastic to cover potholes to see if that would last longer against the plows compared to cold mix. And they're just, that's the best thing is they're open to anything. So we're trying all sorts of things and seeing what's working out better. Our goal is 24 hours within a 24 hour period to get out there and fix that pothole if it's reported. They've had 100% success so far. lot of times it's getting those reported that would help the most. We do travel throughout the city after storm events and see if we can find anything, but the last bullet point there, number three, really kind of tells a story. You know, we've tremendously increased the potholes that we've had to repair, and along those lines we've looked at those areas, and that's part of the outsource to say, is this something that needs to be milled and overlaid or taken care of in a different way, so these guys aren't battling those constantly.
Is there any correlation to condition of the roads, age of the roads, and the propensity for there to be a pothole in the wintertime?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Yes, direct correlation there. And you know, we found some mixed designs that we've had in the past over different projects have not held up as well.
Yeah.
And hopefully we've mitigated a lot of those areas and, you know, taken care of those. But
okay. One thing about that cold patch is it's really a temporary fix.
Yeah.
You might see us fix it and it will blow right back out in the next storm that we have. And so we do our best to try to
stay on top of those. There's a couple of little funky ones right outside my neighborhood
yes.
that do that.
Those are ones. That's a mastic one.
In a row, in a row, in a row. And the next day they're out again. I'm like, I feel bad for you guys. I'm like, these dumb little things, you know, they just keep popping back out.
Yep,
that's the nature of the game that these are playing.
Do we just need to be prepared that as our roads just continue to get older, you know, and I know we're doing a good job in maintaining, that's what you're talking about today, but, you know, with the same type of snowstorm system that came through, you know, it's as our roads age, we're just going to have an uptick on potholes.
Yes,
is that,
yeah.
Is that, okay.
And there's some of those roads, too, that we're waiting on certain projects to come through before we fully repair those. So, such as like 98, we're waiting on that one, a certain project. So, it's a troubled road, and we battle the potholes through there. But
we try not to tear up the same road three times in one
year. Yeah.
I'm just saying. I don't know. That strip you showed, I'm like.
There's tons of you.
Because they let me drive. You guys want to do this part? I'm like, what? This is so hard. Yeah.
So.
Question.
Yeah.
We all know there's an imminent possibility of a great, huge, wonderful earthquake coming. How will our roads hold? I mean, do you have any idea, like, what we're doing to mitigate that? Can we do anything to mitigate that? I've never lived in an earthquake, but I just had some people talking to me a couple days ago about it. Can you forecast for that? What do we do? Like, we just wait till it comes, and then we go, shoot, our roads are just leveled. I mean...
Well, we live in the best part of the valley.
Right. We're not on the fault, but I'm just saying we know where we are. We know where the fault line is. Yeah. What is our...
Except you're safer than I am. There's a lot more liquefaction
than
where I am.
Than
where you
are. Yeah.
We have a plan.
So in Public Works, we do have a plan, and we've kind of looked at our main roads, our artillery roads, our main roads, through roads, and then also the bridges and things like that. And those are the first response we would get to. We're developing that plan right now to go with our city plan, but I think Dustin will share a lot more.
Yeah, you asked an easy question to ask, a very difficult one to answer.
I totally get it.
And
curious
a lot of it,
where you're at.
Yeah, a lot of it depends on how bad the damage is and where it's at.
And we have no idea.
And you have to remember that there's a lot of other infrastructure with our roads. So it's not just go fix the road real quick. We may have to repair water lines, sewer lines, and all of those things first. And in some cases, it may be that we just have to go out there and we just level things out the best we can. You might be driving on a combination broken asphalt, gravelly type road.
Totally good.
Because we're there fixing all the other utilities before we come back in. And repaving the roads may be some of the last. Now, depending on where we're at in the community and the age of the roads, there are other fault systems other than the big one on the east side, the Taylorsville-Banyan fault system, and some others have fingers that reach up into our city. So we do have the potential for surface fault rupture, where you do get the offsets.
Right.
We also have the potential for liquefaction, especially as you move to the eastern portion of our city where we have higher groundwater tables. Mm. And all of those things will contribute to the level of potential damage. And like they said, so we're going to be prioritizing that. The same routes that we look at for our snowplow or school bus routes, those kinds of things will get the first attention to get pathways cleared so that we can start to get other resources where they need to go. Mm-hmm. It's a really coordinated effort. It's an effort that our emergency manager, Aaron Sainsbury, works very closely with Ray and his team, because we'll have to do things like debris management. And so it's all very orchestrated, but it really depends on the intensity and how much damage we get, and how that affects other parts of the neighboring cities. And then it'll be a lot of competition for resources and the prioritization of those resources.
For sure. And sewer and water is higher priority than fixing bumps in the road.
And they'll want to fix freeways and
airports. 100%. 100%.
So some roads, it may take.
I'm curious. We know that there are buildings in our state that are being.
The Capitol, right? Was the infrastructure change, the solid temple infrastructure.
Temple Square.
So do we. I mean, South Jordan City roads are not the highest priority in the state, obviously, but are there things that we can do to make our roads a little more earthquake resilient? I mean, that's probably a dumb question, again, but
no,
I'm curious.
It's a great question, and the answer is yes. That's why our engineers are always looking at the latest in design standards and making sure that when roads are built, they are built to those standards, that they have the right subsurface bases, mm-hmm. that they meet the right compaction. You know, as we learn more and more, we update those standards, and our engineers design to those standards, they enforce those standards, which makes our roads more likely to survive that kind of damage.
So at the end of the earthquake, we'll go to the city boundaries, and then it'll fall off.
We're going to do just fine.
That might happen with some of the other utilities as well.
That's not good, because it's going to make it hard for me to get to work.
So there's state standards, but then there's our city standards, and... Mm. And those state standards will, of course, be across the valley. But city standards, we might have a better...
Yeah, and South Jordan will fare a little better because so much of our infrastructure is new. Right? Yeah. And so we have, you know, things... The standards that they use for earthquake standards have changed ever since the 60s as we've learned more and more. We're a younger city, and so we've been built to the higher standards that were adopted in the 90s and things. Mm-hmm. So a lot of our system... should, in theory, withstand that better than some of the older cities that have infrastructure that's more than 100 years old.
That's such a good point. And you said 42 miles of roads in the last 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
So those would be at a higher standard.
Those are built to the highest standards of construction.
Thank you.
And our inspectors do a phenomenal job of going out to make sure that contractors, when they build the roads, no pun intended, don't cut any corners, and they do it right.
Good. Okay. Thank you.
Good questions, because those kind of things are on people's mind.
So this is just a look at how we're managing these potholes as they're popping up, and we're getting requests. These guys have our asset management program, a query layer that they've created on here. So as we get any, they'll show up in that pink color if they're open work orders. So as they go out and repair them, they'll go to that in progress to show if it's a permanent fix or not. And then obviously to the yellow where it's a completed, fully done. They don't have to mess with it anymore. So yeah, there's seems to be a lot of 118.
I'm just telling it's so funny. Those bubble, I'm like, I know those. I know those guys.
You hit every one of them.
They just keep doing it. It's responsible.
Yep.
But you know, in our plan is because we knew they were going to be running some sewer lines and doing some things. We get in there and build them back right.
Correct.
So we prioritize based on which roads, you know, have the higher traffic volume and do those roads first?
Yeah, correct. We're looking at more of the main thoroughways and everything, looking at the arterials to say, you know, these are traveled the most. You know, the neighborhood ones we'll get to, but yeah, these guys are looking at, you know, the main roads.
That goes back to their design standards. Those roads that have higher traffic have deeper subbase, thicker asphalt. This harkens back to a conversation you had recently about the bus.
So I was just thinking
and, you
that's
know, because in our residential roads, they're not designed to have that heavy traffic all the time, whereas a Redwood Road, it's designed to have that heavy traffic all the time. And that's why we have Ken and his team making sure that as we design collector roads and arterials and neighborhood roads, those different standards get applied appropriately.
Yeah, good.
Maybe.
There we go.
Maybe, Ken.
I'm excited to talk a little bit about our pavement preservation committee. So we meet monthly as a committee. We have representation from the public works folks, from the streets department, from the parks department, because we do manage the trails, and from our facilities folks, because we manage the parking lots as well. And we're meeting internally monthly. We're coordinating our efforts. Again, we want to make sure we're not going to pave a road and then turn around a year later and need to put in a water line or a storm drain line. So that part of that coordination is making sure we're keeping track of all the utility work that needs to happen, not just internal, but you know, we've got utility companies, the gas company, the power company, the sewer district. We're coordinating with them. We're making sure that their work is happening. If we are planning on coming in and repaving a road, that they're getting ahead of us. So again, we don't look silly paving a road and then having it torn up. And I think for the most part, we do a pretty good job at that. We plan budget every year. We determine which treatments we're going to do and how much is going to go towards different treatments. We'll get into that a little bit more as the presentation goes on. One of the important things we do is we do our pavement inspections. And I'll just touch on that real briefly. Every 3 years, we inspect all the pavement in the city. Somebody drives a car around with cameras attached to it. That takes pictures every 10 feet. Then somebody sits down and then looks at those pictures and then assigns a score for the road. And that score goes from a 0 to 100. It's based on cracking, raveling, fatigue cracking, rutting. It's looking into all those things and saying, oh, this road has a score between 0 and 100. And we call that score the OCI, or Overall Condition Index. It can also be called a PCI, Pavement Condition Index. Those are kind of synonyms, but they do the same thing. This is a map, our GIS map of those OCI scores. So different colors represent different scores. The bright green color is the higher scores between 80 and 100. And then all the way down to those dark, I think you can see a couple dark reds in there. Those would be kind of around the 40 or below range. We use this map to determine what kind of repairs need to be done. If a contractor or a utility company needs to come in on a certain road, well, we're going to hold them to a higher standard if it's still a green road compared to if it's a red road or an orange road. The repair is going to be a little bit different, or we're going to require them to do. So we can keep those good roads good. That's kind of our motto. We want to keep good roads good. We want to do the right treatment at the right time for the right road at the right time, and that's kind of what we're after. So this map helps us do that. So our last survey was in April of this year. We got an 82.5 average score for the city. That puts us in a very good category. So we're pretty happy with how that score came out. If you look at our pie chart on the left there, that kind of divides up the different scores, the different bands. We have less than 15% of our roads below a 60. So again, we've got a lot of roads above a 60 score, and a 60 is considered a good score, a good road. So the vast majority of our roads are in pretty good shape.
Is this OCI rating kind of industry standard?
It is. It's an industry standard. So we would find this all across the country pretty much. Yeah, they're all. Anybody who's got a good pavement preservation program is using an OCI score.
Can I ask another question with that?
Yeah.
You said you have a vehicle that drives around and takes pictures, and then you have someone that sits and rates. Is that person bias?
So we're going to get into that in my next slide.
Now you're stealing the thunder. Jeez.
Here's our last four surveys that we've done. We've only done four in the cities. We started in 2016. These are the last four that we've done. You can see there's a little bit of a fluctuation there in the data. 2021's quite a bit higher than 2024. And I think there's a few reasons for that. One of them is that I think there is a little bit of bias with somebody sitting in the computer. The company that does this for us, they've got interns sitting in the computer, and they're making a judgment call, right? And evidently in 2021, they were feeling pretty good about us, because I think our scores are probably a little high in 21.
They liked it all.
Yeah. The good news is in 24, the inspection was actually done by AI. So artificial intelligence was what looked at all the photos and assigned the scores. Then if we saw anomalies between the scores that were given in 21 and 24, then a human went and double checked and made sure the AI was catching it correctly. But yeah, we have switched over to AI. I feel much more comfortable with our 24 numbers. I think AI did a good job of giving us correct scores.
So. They don't have emotions.
Yeah. not catching AI on a bad day. I don't know what I did.
And thank you.
That's the mayor's new way of saying you're out of time.
Yeah.
No, that's the trap door.
That one right there. Yeah, I don't know why it's not.
AI
have said
my.
I am not.
Took over the whole.
Don't touch it.
There you go. Okay.
Woo! It really wants to just.
See that button over there.
I was going to say, did we get the button?
I don't know what I did.
So, cost, when you have interns sitting looking at it compared to AI, are we saving money having AI look at it?
We didn't know that's what they were going to actually do this time. So
so you're paying the same amount.
We paid the same amount.
Go negotiate
it. Yeah, we'll look at when we look at the again in 3 years, we'll have a different conversation with them. But yeah, we actually didn't know that's what they were going to do this year.
Interesting.
So. The graph that's going to come up, if we can get loaded again, I'll just kind of start explaining what it's about. The average road, if we were to go in and pave a brand new road and kind of wash our hands of it and say, here's this road, we're just going to see how long it lasts. So the average road is going to last about 20 years before it's going to just deteriorate. So we need to do the preventative maintenance along the way to make that road last longer than 20 years, which is ultimately what our objective is. So that aging curve, that white line, that's the natural aging curve of a road. You know, or you get about 20 years out of it. If we can catch the road early on in that first 5-7 years, and we can do a preservation treatment on it, typically we can use a little cheaper treatment, and we can get another 5-7 years of life out of the road. So that light green line at the top kind of shows us if we were to do that. Get a good treatment on it early, and then you continue to do that every 7 years. You could really extend the life of the road and theoretically just keep going out with it. If we wait longer and that road starts to age a little bit further, well, then the treatment options become a little more expensive. And we don't get quite the return on time either. And we may only get 5 years or 3 years out of the treatment as opposed to 5 to 7 years. So that kind of shows the black line. The black line would be if we kind of let the road age a little bit and then we do a treatment. So this goes back to what I said a little bit earlier. We're trying to keep good roads in good condition. And that can sometimes annoy the public a little bit because you've got two neighborhoods next to each other. One has a set of really nice roads. The other one's maybe a little more deteriorated. And we're coming in and doing treatments on the nice roads. And the public is going, wait, my road doesn't look as nice as them. Why aren't you doing anything on my road? And essentially that is we're trying to keep the good roads good because it's more cost effective in the long run. We can get more square footage done that way. Flip to the next one. So the kinds of treatments that we're outsourcing, we're doing mill and overlays, which that's just coming in, milling out 2 inches of asphalt, putting down 2 inches of asphalt, basically get a brand new looking road. It's one of the more expensive options for treatment, for preservation. Typically, we're using this treatment on a road with a lower OCI score, somewhere around 50, maybe a little bit lower. Another treatment that we use a lot is a microsurface. It's a very thin layer, a half an inch or smaller, that goes right on top of the asphalt. It's uses a polymer and some smaller aggregate, so it can be laid really thin. We typically put this on a road with an OCI of 65 to 80. The high density mineral bond is like a seal coat that we put on. This is a very popular treatment. We put that down on roads that are in really good shape, 70 to 95 OCI. It makes the road look really dark. People really like that treatment. Other than the fact that it does require a 24-hour closure when we do it. In the past we've done some chip seals to kind of fit into that. So that 50 to 65 OCI range is a little harder for us. In the past we've done chip seals in that area. Chip seals public's not fond of those because the gravel tends to come up and make a mess. The roads tend to shed a little bit of gravel. So we've kind of got away from doing those and we're looking at some other options. A scrub seal is something that we're looking at doing in the near future, which is a chip seal that's basically been broomed and has a better coat on top and not going to shed as much. So there's some options that we're looking at trying in the future to see how that can kind of fit into that OCI between 50 and 65. It's kind of the window we're missing right now with our outsourced road work. I'm going to flip to the next slide. The other thing we've done is our high density mineral bond, which I said is kind of our slurry seal treatment, or not slurry seal, but seal coat treatment. We've kind of taken some roads in a neighborhood and put a different product on each road. Some vendors have requested that we look at their stuff, and so we said, okay, let's try some test sessions. We did this 2 years ago. So we've got these different roads with different products, and we've been able to watch how they wear and tear based on the same amount of traffic, same amount of snow plows. And out of that, you can kind of see from the pictures, they don't all wear evenly. Some products are better than others. There is one product that we're willing to kind of give a shot and maybe try in some other areas based on this case study that we did. I'm going to flip to the next one. This is our budget that we've had the last 4 years, between 21 and 24 for outsourced. We're kind of sitting at about the $1.7 million a year average for those 4 years. We did hold off on a little bit of work in 22 because we knew Google Fiber was coming. We wanted to make sure we weren't, again, putting brand new payment down and then having Google Fiber micro trench everything. So we kind of held off a little bit in 22, did some more work in 23, kind of offset that. And flip that again. This is our total square footage that we've treated per year for the last 10 years. You can see our average really hasn't changed much. If anything, it's gone down a little bit. We're probably averaging about 2.5 million square feet of asphalt that we're treating per year. Our lane miles has gone up though, from 700 lane miles to that 850 lane miles in the last 10 years. So. But we're trying to keep up on top of it, but unfortunately the cost of doing this maintenance has gone up as well. The next slide kind of shows some of our cost increases we've seen over just the last 4 years. So our overlay cost has gone up from like $1.50 a square foot to close to $2 a square foot. We've seen the micro go up from a little over 50 cents a square foot to about 75 cents a square foot. And that high density mineral bond's gone from about 27 cents a square foot to about a little over 40 cents a square foot. 40 cents a square foot. So that's kind of what those treatments are costing us right now. Flip. One thing we've been kind of lucky about is we've been doing a lot of transite replacement, waterline replacement over the last 10 plus years. We've been able to piggyback a lot of our road resurfacing on those projects. We've kind of made it a priority as we've prioritized our transite replacement. We've looked at which roads need work, and we've kind of that's kind of been the priority for which water lines get replaced. And so we've been able to kind of utilize that to help get some of our roads rebuilt. Unfortunately, fortunately, we're running out of transite lines to replace. So we got one more year pretty much of that, and then we won't have that ability to kind of get some of our roads rebuilt by using those water line replacements.
And that's been a good thing for Earth preparedness. Yeah. Replacing all that kind of pipe with newer pipe is a big deal for us.
So did you say all the city's water lines will be replaced in how soon?
Well, these are
just the transite.
So these are the old concrete.
It's old
concrete
that water lines really
It's asbestos pipe or transite pipe.
Or like asbestos cement based pipe.
Yeah, it's like
has a wrap around it.
And that's our oldest pipe that we have in the system. We master planned that and determined, hey, we need to start replacing that. It's dangerous to repair because once you cut that asbestos becomes friable. And so you have to break it and go sections. It's very large repairs and it breaks a lot. And so this is our last year. It's actually under contract and we're finishing up transite, and you will not see that in the budget anymore.
It's taken more than a decade.
This next summer, so 2025.
Yeah.
So we would replace the pipe and then we'd charge the water budget for the road repair as well. Is that right?
A percentage, yes. So whatever the impact, not for the whole road, but for whatever the water line impacted
portion of it.
Yeah, a portion of it.
Could you talk a little bit about our partner agencies, like Jordan Basin, for example? You know, whenever you have a project. And they need to put a line in, or they want to widen the line down, and sometimes how those costs are shared on road work and those kind of things. Like, there's some good teamwork.
Talk about
we've got a few of those right now. Yeah.
What the gas company's doing on 13th, and what our plan is for that.
Yeah. So you know, we look at each case a little bit different on a case-by-case basis, but essentially our depending on the OCI score of the road depends on what the utility company is required to do. If that OCI is above an 80, I believe they mill and overlay the whole road. And if it's not, then they need to do our standard T-patch. There have been cases where we've known the road's in bad shape, utilities coming through, we'll pitch in some dollars to make sure the whole road gets built to a new standard. And we kind of look at each of those on a case-by-case basis. So on 13th West with the gas line, there's multiple sections they're doing. Each section actually is being treated a little bit differently depending on that road's OCI score and what the gas company's been held responsible for.
Yeah. So. I think sometimes it also goes the flip side where we're going to do something with the road and they weren't necessarily planning on doing anything, but there's like, while you're doing work there, we'll get in there and do stuff and we can and they'll even chip in some of the
correct.
Some of the yeah. road costs as well, right? So we're coordinating with these groups to it's good on both sides.
Yeah, we actually
initiating it or whether we're initiating it. Yeah.
Yeah, we actually met with the gas company today on two different roads that we have coming up for pavement preservation and seeing if they wanted to get in there and do some work, which they were both of them, they were contemplating whether to do some work in those roads.
Yeah. Brad and his team they spend a lot of time with outside utility stakeholders trying to coordinate these projects and telling them we will be doing this road in 2027, so plan your work around that and vice versa.
Yeah.
So we try to collaborate a lot
on
those. And kudos to Ken and Brad and that whole team for standing tall, fighting hard on some of those to make sure that we don't do a road and they come back the next year and cut it.
Yeah, that's great.
We hold pretty tight to that.
I'm going to flip to the next one. Yeah, so, I'll jump back in here.
These are just some opportunities for improvement that we're looking at. We just got done with the PWX conference, APWA. A lot of AI technology. There's actually asphalt management systems that we can put in place that have the AI technology we could bring in-house. So we're looking at cost there and return on investment so we could do our own. And that's a constant evaluation of our road. So we have an updated OCI at all times. Also looking at the different equipment we can run and with the expertise of these guys and what we feel is, you know, what we can bring in-house that makes sense. And, you know, looking at, you know, does it make sense to lease these, rent them, purchase them? You know, how does that break-even point look and what we're doing? I'm looking at, like Ken mentioned, the new treatment options, looking at scrub seals to see if that fits our toolbox a little bit better than some of these others where we're missing that little chip seal area in between that OCI. And just researching, like we said, collaborating with others that are doing different things. We're meeting with Tooele County on their chip seal, seeing how they do it. Looking at other efforts like West Jordan's doing and everything just to see, you know, does any of that fit what we want to do? And will that, you know, the boots on the ground, does that make sense to these guys and will it really help them? Also looking at funding, looking at grants, see if there's anything we can bring in that way to help with funding of pavement preservation. Does it help purchase equipment, whatever it is, to see, you know, does it make sense to us and does it help in a way that's going to be, you know, advantageous for us? And really in conclusion, it's just, you know, using these guys that are in-house knowledge that we have as far as our in-house maintenance efforts, what these guys feel like is going to work best for us and, you know, really collaborating with them and what we can get done, utilizing that knowledge. And like I said, they're open to trying different things and, you know, seeing what we can do. So we're using that. Like we want to keep that OCI above an 80, so it's going to take some investment and some time and, you know, thoughts there. So we're looking at what we got to do to maintain that, looking at those grants to get us the funding or whatever it is that we need to do. And then really just trying to be innovative, staying ahead of the curve, you know, what's really working best and what's going to, you know, serve us and our community to keep those roads as nice as we can. So
I will just say, Mayor, we have one of the best streets divisions of any city in the state of Utah. The talent level that we have and the skill set that they have is incredible.
Yeah.
And these guys are pretty humble about it, but I'm here to tell you they are some of the best that there are. And Edson's one of the only people that can beat me at Cornhole.
We actually saw that. Yeah.
They are really good. And their expertise and some of their previous working in the private sector, their skill sets are phenomenal. And And we're really lucky to have the team that we have. And in the last couple of years, it has really grown to be one of our strongest divisions.
Okay.
So private roads, you know, so when we approve a private road, you know, what are the expectations moving forward? You know, I mean, we maintain our roads, but these are all in our city, you know. I know they're responsible for doing the maintenance, their own maintenance on the road. But is there a point where they're out of compliance? You know, they're you know, if the roads get a certain condition, like we have these scores, you know, do we ever look at their roads and give it a score and say, you know what, you have to, you know, as we're approving these roads, you have to keep your road above a certain score, you know, or you're out of compliance.
Well, that's the advantage for those groups that have private roads, right? They're private, they get to do what they want. Same with parking lots and those kinds of things. The real challenge becomes when they let them get in such a state of disrepair that they want the city to take them over.
Yeah.
And that's why we have a very formal program. When private roads want to be taken over, we say, well, you got to bring them up to our standard, because we don't want to have to pay for that. And a lot of times private roads don't get built to that same standard. And so they do tend to fail and have problems. But again, it's like any private property. We don't cross that line and go tell them how to maintain it. But yeah, when they come ask us to take it over, we say, you got to bring it up to our standard.
Good.
Yeah.
Question.
You touched on it, but I was going to say, I for one, am super impressed with the culture you've created in the public works. I mean, it started, I think, with Jason. Handed off to you. Like, this is really impressive. I love it. And I was going to ask where these two gentlemen are from, like another city, the private sector, and you kind of alluded. Would you mind telling us a little bit about these two gentlemen?
I'll let you guys tell it by yourself.
I've done a little bit of work with Newman Construction when I was younger. Definitely was just a helping hand. I've got most of my experience here through South Jordan doing asphalt. I worked a little bit at Harriman for about a year, so I learned a little bit there, and then I moved here, and then so I've gained most of my knowledge here through South Jordan. But this guy, he's been doing it for a long time, so I'll let him.
So I came from the private sector. My family owned a paving company. We originated out of Arizona. So I'm right around 20 years into it. So we did everything from highways to parking lots, but then we started to really get into utility type paving. So Canyon Pipeline, who's doing all the work on 13th, we had a contract. We did all of their asphalt up until about 5 years ago, and we decided to go ahead and shut our company down for a couple of different reasons. It was kind of circumstantial, and so then I decided to rather than go to another paving company, to try to come to the city and see if I can help maintain roads instead of try to put dollars in somebody's pocket.
Cool, thank you.
So. They're two of the very best in this business.
Awesome. Yeah, go ahead.
I was just curious, what's our lowest rated road, OCI, like 50, 60?
No, it's a little lower.
There's
the name of that road?
There are some.
We keep our roads very nice. That's why I'm curious.
There are some roads that, I mean, not very many, but there are some roads lower than a 40.
I think if you went back to that map,
show
our OCI map.
Yeah.
That screenshot.
Yeah, you showed like some red, so but what does that mean in South
Jordan?
Yeah,
if you look at that area, kind of
like St. Andrew's Drive.
See, yeah,
it's like one
off Sky Drive.
Off Sky, right there.
There's some area. There's a couple roads in there that are not in great shape.
But that would be like a 40, maybe.
Yeah.
The ones
okay.
More.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
and those roads are probably 50 years old.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, part of the reason I asked is because I drive some roads on a weekly basis that I believe. Last I heard from their city, they were down in around the 20, actually below 20.
Wow.
Yeah, they're alligatoring, and you can see the dirt, and that's why I figured that South Jordan, we didn't have any that would be down in the teens, but that's why I was curious as to kind of what our
list there may be a little segment, because the roads are divided up into segments, and there may be a little segment that maybe gets that low, but the whole stretch probably wouldn't be that way, right?
Yeah.
And this map isn't really the updated map because a lot of transite was done up there and those roads were repaved. Yeah. It's not showing.
This would have been what it was in April of the year, right?
Yeah.
Snapshot in April.
Yeah. Right. But even at that,
yeah,
what we would consider one of our lower quality roads is still above some cities.
Yeah.
Yeah. For sure.
Many cities.
Many cities. Yes.
I'm really grateful for the work you guys do. I appreciate these updates, these reports that you come in every year or two and kind of show us where things are at. I feel like I got a master class last year when I got to be part of the roads team for a day. And what you do is so important. It's so important, and it's important to the city's bottom line. We're proud of the infrastructure we have here, and it's a key element of our quality of life that we are determined to protect and maintain. But what you do, it's hard. It's really hard to get it right, and you're so good at it. We have cities in this state that have had to bond just for maintenance of their roads because they didn't keep them up for so long.
Yeah.
Failing roads, and it's an investment, but I appreciate the leadership in staying ahead so that we don't lose all control of our roads and we can't afford to keep up, we can't afford to fix them, and then they're all failing and you have to do a bond, which that blows my mind, to have to bond for operations and maintenance of, that's not even new projects, it's not capital projects really, it's just for maintenance of roads. And so thank you for your visionary leadership and for your skills and expertise. It is such an important part of what we love about living here. And if we're doing our jobs right, then the residents don't even have to think about it. They're just driving along and happy to live here. And they just, you know, maybe aren't even aware of what it takes to go into it. And wanted you to know that we have a little bit of an understanding, just a little, about what it takes, and just appreciate what you guys do. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, yeah. Thank you.
I think we're done.
All right. Appreciate you guys being here with us. Thanks.
Thanks for having us. Back next time.
Okay. The final item on our agenda for this study meeting is business licensing municipal code. We're going to be talking about a section of our code, business licensing, that is robust. There's a lot that fits into it, a lot that's under it. We'll turn to our city manager, Mr. Lewis, and our city attorney, Mr. Lewis, for this.
I knew we'd have a few extra minutes tonight, and I thought it would be fun to talk a little bit about the municipal code. We talk a lot about...
Did you say fun?
Yeah. I'm waiting for Patrick to say, I love the municipal code.
He's been in the office three times today. Did you know this was in here? Did you know that?
I actually love it when I get time to spend time with the code.
We got to keep you busier.
We talk a lot about things that, you know, the council sets the vision for what we do, right? And then you pass the laws to help us implement that vision. And we spend a lot of time in Title 16 and 17 because that's where all of the planning and the zoning, and that's what the Planning Commission looks at. And that's how our city looks, right? That's how we build the roads and how we zone things. But there's another section that we often don't talk about, but you guys get asked about it all the time. And it's in Title 5, which we just call the business licensing section. And because we've had several things this year come up, and I know you guys are getting asked questions about other things that I anticipate coming up in the next few months, I just wanted to hit some of the highlights of some of the things that are in Title 5. And we should have a few minutes. I've asked Attorney Luce to be prepared to do a deep dive into a couple of these sections, just so that you kind of understand what's in the code. So that as you're getting requests, you know, from constituents, and you've seen some of those even as recently as last week, you kind of know what's in the code and why it fits in this section. So obviously, if it's the business license section, there's a whole section about business licenses. If you run a business, you got to get a license. You might not remember this, but alarm systems and services. If you're an alarm company and you do things here, if you have alarms and you call the police and you have a lot of false alarms, you have to pay fees. Remember, you guys have dealt with it. It's Title 5, good stuff. Alcoholic beverages. We're going to circle back to that one. We've taken out some things over the years because they just don't make sense. Like automatic amusement devices hasn't been a problem here for decades, so it got taken out of the code.
What?
Coin-operated musical devices.
Oh, you're skipping over the one we actually were curious about.
That was before my time.
Yeah. So
as communities grow and change, right, some things just aren't as problematic as they once were. And so they get deleted from the code and new things get added. For example, short-term rentals weren't a problem 20 years ago. We've had a lot of discussions about them. This is the section of code where short-term rentals is going to land. That's why I thought it'd be helpful for you to understand some of the other things that are here.
He was excited to see that we had mentioned short terms years ago when we adopted, if you have four or more units as rentals, you had to get a business license. We included,
well,
just that whether long-term or short-term, you have to get one.
I'll throw that out when we get there because I highlighted because I thought it was cool.
He was real excited.
I told you, I geek out about this stuff. This is what makes life exciting.
Most excitement we've seen for a while.
Good.
Home occupations. And over the last few years, there's been a lot of changes. The state legislature weighed in. We had to make changes about not every single home occupation requires a license anymore, only certain ones. And so this code got a little thinner. Model homes. I don't know if you guys remember making some changes to this a couple years ago. But we had some developers who turned model homes into commercial businesses and residential neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. So we went in and fixed the code and said, you can't turn a home into a commercial business in a residential neighborhood.
Construction
office.
Yeah. Maybe you're wrong.
Mass gatherings, notifications to the city. We want to know when you're throwing a big party in the city because it requires a lot of coordination of city resources. You guys will remember this one. You guys messed with this one earlier in the year. And I shouldn't say messed with, but you made some amendments to make the community
Ryan's
a
dying.
Better place.
The I would have said made extremely good changes.
What was it?
Massage businesses. Remember, we were having some problems in the community, and so we made some updates to our code. Made it easier for our police department to enforce that code. And we continue to follow up, don't we, Chief? And appreciate those changes to the code. Related to that are the energy therapy establishments. It's, if you're curious, it's like massage without touching. It's the
Reiki.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
The Ahu chakra.
Yeah, we have a whole
maybe sound
food trucks. You remember we added this not too long ago? Remember?
Mm-hmm.
Not a big deal 20 years ago. Then it became a big deal. We added that. Pawnbrokers and secondhand stores.
No, you can't allow them by state law. You have to allow them.
Retail fireworks. This is another one. And what's really interesting about Title V is it really affects a lot of our departments. This ties into our economic development with the business licensing. It ties into special events and our recreation. It ties into police. It ties into fire. They all have roles in this section. And I'm amazed at how many things it says a city manager has to worry about. going to be spending a lot more time here. So fireworks. Residential rental housing. This is the one that we already had that said that if you have more than four rental units in the city, you have to have a business license. And what I got really excited about, I'm like, did you know that they have to have a guest registry and each guest is required to sign their guest registry? You have to have more than four. But this was an issue that came up just a couple of weeks ago when you guys were talking about how restrictive do we want to be? What do we want to do? So I got really excited.
You know how you can name a lot of rules in your house after one of your kids? That one was after San Tropez, and Councilmember Johnson probably remembers when they came in and they were built as condominiums to sell, but they started renting them as apartments instead. And so we said, if you're going to do that, that's a business. You've got to operate like one. Mm-hmm. And that's why we have that.
This one is the sexually oriented businesses portion. It's one of the lengthier.
You can call it SOBs.
The SOBs.
that's what they call them.
It's an interesting reading.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, if I treat the code book like the Bible, that's kind of like Song of Solomon in the middle.
Yeah, yeah.
telecommunications systems, wireless communications. When we talk about franchise agreements and what they're doing and how they tear things up. These are the two sections of Title V that apply to them.
Yeah.
Towing services. Again, this deals with preventing predatory towing, like some of the communities have problems with.
Mm-hmm.
We've got some rules that help us to
manage
that. And
it keeps big tow lots, things like that.
Then there's some miscellaneous business licenses if you're doing waste management. Free expression activities and special events. If you've ever heard us talk about, the parade and the distribution of sugary treats, this is the section of code that actually deals with that.
Where we have to gently toss that one? Is that the gently toss ordinance?
Yeah, except for it doesn't even say gently toss.
Oh.
So if you're interested in reading it, I'll let you have my copy. Common interest communities, this is the one that requires HOAs to register with the city every year so that we can know where they're at and what they're doing. And another one that I know that you guys would all be interested in, because I know you've been getting requests and concerns, is retail tobacco specialty businesses. So two of the ones tonight that I thought you'd be the most interested in because of questions that I know some of you have been getting, some of you have been asking, wanted to maybe do a little bit deeper dive into that, but I wanted you to kind of see how they fit into the bigger picture of things. So with that, I'm going to ask for Attorney Luce's assistance as he kind of walks through kind of in detail what the code actually says, so that you have the basis of what's currently allowed and not allowed in the city. So as people ask you, well, would the city ever change this? Could we do this? You'll have a basis to work from.
Do you want to go with smoking or drinking first?
Smoking.
Excellent.
Because we'll need the drink afterwards.
So 5.98 of our city code. Well, before we go there, there's a couple principles that are good to remember with business licenses. As a general rule, business licenses are things you've invited in the city. So through zoning, you allow the use, but actual operation is governed by the business license, right? And so whether it's home occupations, whether it's hotels, we have rules specifically for each, or commercial businesses, we regulate their operational things through the business license. So if some operations are becoming problematic, just let us know. Usually we can deal with through licensing. Now, some things we can't, but a lot of times we can. Several of you have had business licenses or do have business licenses in the city at a certain point, so you know the process of coming and applying. They don't run with the land, meaning if we make a change to the code this year, when they renew, they have to come in compliance with the new code or not operate in South Jordan. So it's different in the use of the land. It's running the business, and we can change that code, and we do when there's a reason to, right? And then there's also a revocation process, an appeal process. So we can revoke or deny the license if they don't meet our code. If we do either one of those, they have an appeal right, but it's not the same as like land use, where it's a property ownership. It's a right to access what you're allowing. It's a little bit different in theory. It's not one of your bundle of sticks. It's, if you let me do it and I obey the rules, you can't take it away. But you can change the rules on me. Does that make sense? So when you approach business licensing from that standpoint, the first thing you ask yourself is, do I have to allow it? And it's clear in the law, in the state law, that we do not have to allow specialty smoke shops, tobacco retail stores. Okay, it says so right in there. We adopted a code in 2012 outlining some of the things with, there's proximity requirements, and they're a little bit broader in state law, and we basically cite the state law, but they're a little bit broader in state law, meaning further away from schools, libraries, you know, all the sensitive places, than it is with alcohol. So there's proximity requirements. They have to have certain certifications and stuff. Well, not certifications, but they have to obey federal laws as to what they sell, right? Selling tobacco, not other stuff at all. It has to be labeled in accordance with the FDA, and we can enforce on any of those. And then, not sure what else you want to know with it, but from the standpoint, there's certain days they have to be or they can't be open, and they have to keep all of their licenses and permissions from the state, and if they have any federal, or we can view and inspect them. If we enter in, I don't know what other questions you have about them. I know we have several in there as to whether or not if they're by, let's say, a dance place,
yeah,
for example,
is
that in compliance? And it probably is with the current code that a dance studio isn't a school. They're different. But those are all things we're looking into a lot closer.
If a specialty shop continues to violate the state or federal laws, then we can revoke their business license.
compliance.
Yeah, we will. And what that process is, we give them notice, tell them to get within compliance. If they don't to our satisfaction, then we hold a hearing. That is given to the city manager to hold the hearing. Generally, he will delegate that to, we'll bring in an outside attorney or someone. I've acted as a hearing officer for Sandy City half dozen times and for other places. And so you hear the evidence, weigh it. Generally, what you'll find with a lot of these places is there's stuff on the application that they just kind of fill in, and they're not exactly accurate. And generally, their licenses will be revoked. And then when they reapply, they got to show that they're following the rules. Some of the things talk about, they can't have certain felonies if they're going to operate certain businesses, like with alcohol and tobacco, things like that. So if you have more specific questions, let me know, and we can go down that rabbit hole. I don't want to, since there's some enforcement stuff going on, I don't want to get into maybe an open discussion about that, because that's all, I mean, that's really recent, right, Chief?
Very recent, yeah.
And so I'd rather let that play out. But if you have questions, we can answer what we can answer. Happy to do so. You ready for a drink?
I'm always ready.
So but we have the ability, I mean, I understand something's already in our city. You know, I mean, there's a grandfathering, I understand that. But we could prevent any more from coming into our city if we wanted to own these smoke shops. Is that right?
Well, so grandfathering is a principle from land use, a pre-existing non-conforming use.
Okay.
Use at the end of that is very important.
Yeah.
If we wanted to get rid of a certain business practice or business licensing, what I would suggest is we do an amortization schedule where we give them a period of time to move out, maybe a year or years, maybe a couple, 2-3 years, something like that. But we say in 2027, there will no longer be tobacco retailing specialty businesses. We put them on notice, we work through that process. So they know as their leases come up. I mean, what we don't want to do is get into a consequential damage type claim where they have a lease that they're obligated to pay, and now we change things. So we would want to do it smart, but there's a way we can do that if that's where the council desired to go.
And there are some other sections. In fact, the alcohol section has one where we've put certain dates that said if you existed before this date, mm-hmm. you can remain. And if you didn't exist before this date, you can.
And then the mayor will remember this is they changed the state law, and we were one of the few cities that affected with bar retail licenses. And we brought this to you, I believe, all but Ms. Johnson were on the council at this time. And we didn't have that, and so we allowed a couple of the, I believe they were dining club or some kind of weird license. We allowed that to morph into a bar license for the two bar licenses we have in the Oyster Bar at Market Street and the
break.
Yeah. So the cutoff was March 28, 2017.
Yeah, and so that was part of meetings and negotiation with the state as the state changed their liquor laws that then kind of fall down, you know, rolls downhill. And we adapted.
That was another one I was reading earlier today that we gave a date and said if you existed before this, you can.
It's actually the tobacco, because before we regulated it, there were a couple in, if I remember right. So I think there was a date in there.
Oh, yeah, you're right. It was the May 8th, 2012 yeah. date that made them exempt from certain sections.
Yeah, but it made them exempt because they were pre-existing. They were under a general business license, and then we imposed a specific tobacco retailer license, so they stayed for those purposes under that general. So if you were headed that direction, which we certainly could with
the... I'd like staff to explore it.
Yes.
And to come back with some information, if that's okay, Mayor.
That's great.
And then we can outline
Thank you.
What we think is a reasonable time and process. Like I said, I would want to know more about, you know, moving it over a period of time, not just put tomorrow. Now, if someone's violating the law, we'll revoke their license when we have evidence sufficient to do so. You guys are pretty familiar with alcohol. Sure. From the standpoint of you've dealt with the licenses in various ways over the city, whether it be a transition from a dining club license to a bar license, you know that there's distance requirements, again, to schools and stuff. And as our cities changed and our demographics have changed. We do have a few establishments that serve harder liquor, the Break and the Oyster Bar. We do have some fine dining restaurants that serve wine, and they have different licenses. If you look in 5.12 of our code, well, there's a bunch of definitions, and I got to give all compliments to Brian and Amber in business licensing who really know this stuff, and stay up with it with our businesses. And our businesses, I mean, I've only heard good things working with them. And so we lead them to get the right license for what they need to do, whether they're doing a catering thing and bringing alcohol in, whether they're doing off-premise beer sales for temporary type things. The county did stuff like that. And now we're going to have new situations, right? We have a stadium going up. And,
right. How do our laws square with that?
So if you look at the list of licenses we have in South Jordan, so the state has a little bit longer list, but we have a bar license, a beer-only restaurant license, and if you'd like, I can send you these docking points that Charity helped put together for us. Mm-hmm. Full-service restaurant license, limited service, off-premise beer, off-premise banquet, on-premise beer, single event, special use, and temporary beer event. Those allow the stadium to work like it's doing down at Smith's Ballpark with all phases of that stadium but one, and that is their
package.
Well, that's licensed, but it's their exclusive boxes that they have. That they, you know, people will basically buy for a year or rent for a year, a luxury box. And in that, this weird thing happens with the state, because Utah, we have to be weird with our liquor laws, right? In that, now they become a space that can qualify for something called a packing or a packaging license. And also says packing in a few places. Excuse me. So that license allows them to basically become their own mini state liquor store, where they buy as wholesalers and then they retail for a price. Now, generally, they're wining and dining guests, or mm-hmm. it's for their business or family or whatever. But that's the only one we don't have. And so if it would be amenable to you, that is one thing that the Bees people have asked us for. They met with us about a month ago, 3 weeks mm-hmm. ago. And said, hey, we really like what you've got. They're not asking us to add more bar licenses other than do we have in the city. They don't want any of that at this point, and I don't foresee that they will, because we've said get your requests in now. But they would like to be able to have those luxury boxes with alcohol. What happens is they will buy a certain amount of alcohol, and then it stays in the luxury box from game to game to game until they buy more. It doesn't leave. They're not allowed to have it leave that place.
It's similar to like a hotel. They might buy a whole case of wine.
A hotel might do it too.
And you might order it to your room, and they can bring it to your room and leave it without having to uncork it or open it, because they have that ability to do that under a packaging license. And that's similar to what the luxury suites need, so that before you arrive, you can say, hey, I need 4 cases of beer and 2 bottles of wine, and it can be there in the suite when you get there, and it doesn't all have to be opened.
None of our hotels currently have requested that. We might get hotels that will. I understand hotels like Grand American, some of those have these types of licenses. That's kind of why we have them. The Delta Center has them. All of the big arenas, the big fancy hotels have them.
So currently, as we're operating, the Bees would not be able to do these luxury things.
They'd be able to do the box, just not sell the alcohol to the box.
So like right now, if you go to a Bees game and you buy a beer, they pour it, you can go to your seat.
You can
do all of that with these licenses. If you buy a can of beer, they crack it open for you, so you have to take it to your seat. So, but to go to the luxury suite and just have the bottle of wine chilling on ice, or
and we don't currently allow that.
We don't have the license to allow
that.
So we would need to add what
they call packages. We've never been asked. Let's say we had a very high end hotel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if Grand America built here, they would.
Right. We might have been asked this 5 years ago.
So for them to operate the way they want to operate, they're going to have to come to us and ask us to amend.
They've asked us if we'd be willing. We've talked to you in the past, and it seemed like
you'd be amenable for us to bring you something and explain it. That's part of walking through this tonight.
Okay. But it's not on the agenda. We're just
No.
Okay.
We're going.
I wanted you to kind of know what was in there because I know that you guys have been asked this.
We have a few code questions that have come up quite a bit lately that it's in this section. So it's
not just
time
from
to talk through.
Not just from
the
bees organization, but other people have asked us similarly.
Right. And
many times they've come and asked questions, and Brian and staff have been really good. They just said, no, you can do that in the code. It actually allows you to do that.
Very frankly, it was an ancillary part of the code text amendment change that you got a few weeks ago with the boot bus. But the way she was operating or is operating, she had people coming to her home, which is in violation of our current home walk ordinance. And she would have had to ask for a change of that if she was allowed to keep her vehicle at her home because we don't allow anything outside of the house. So a lot of things actually do kind of impact with our Title V.
Okay, so to clarify again, I don't drink alcohol, I'm clueless. So when you go to the bees, whether it's in South Jordan or Salt Lake, they open the can for you,
The on-premise beer retailer, that's the license they have.
Part of Utah's.
So they're meant to drink it on premise.
Okay.
And
so they don't
sell
you a can of beer that's not open, that you will take
outside.
Exactly.
The off-premise beer retailer is like your convenience stores and supermarkets where you can buy some and walk out.
So currently, if we do nothing, when the bees build, they can do that. Crack, here, sell the beer.
Yeah.
But it's this luxury suite thing that we don't have.
They can still do luxury suites.
But not
no
the way they, right. No, so
yeah.
Luxury, not at that level.
Exactly.
So let's say Xandra Real Estate wanted to rent one of the suites for a game.
Correct, yes.
And you were bringing
it,
in clientele that like to enjoy wine.
Right.
You could say when you rented that suite, we will need 4 bottles of wine.
Mm-hmm.
They would be waiting for you in the suite.
If we make a change. But
right,
not currently.
Right,
yeah,
now,
if we allow packaging.
Right now, they wouldn't
what they
do that. Or
they would
package.
Not.
They'd have to open it up for you and then bring it out and like pour.
They wouldn't allow the wine or the strong liquors.
Okay, so that's where an ask is coming.
You have to have.
Because I've been trying to think, how is this going to navigate and what's the ask?
Beer,
so basically what we would probably do in our code where we outline all of the licenses that the state has, we would add what they call the packaging license as one of the available licenses that you could obtain. Now
that
they still
applies
have
to those luxury suites.
I just read.
Or a fancy hotel.
Like if they build a fancy hotel.
Sure.
I would not be opposed to having a Grand America built out here. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
option keeps getting tossed around.
The other part about that is there's banquet licenses that caterers will use, and they could cater something in, and under the banquet license, there could be some alcohol and stuff. But for the suites, week in, week out, you own the right to that suite for a season. The packaging license is what the state has set forth for that situation.
So if
McGuire
Industries bought the suite for the entire season and he always wanted to have 2 cases of beer, but maybe his clients that week didn't drink any, but it could stay there at the suite.
It has to stay
so
there.
It'd be Crown Royal for my dad.
He'd be coming to every game.
Exactly.
Once a business purchases that suite, isn't it just for like the games, but other people can use it
some,
other times? Or
some buy it for the entire year.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Some buy it for a certain game. Those that buy it for the year might sublet it out for a couple of there's lots of different ways to
got it.
It's just that this is the license that allows them to have that level of alcohol liquor in the suite.
Okay.
From game to game to game. And once they distribute it to the street suite, it stays there until it's gone and they do a new order.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Ryan, but also the way I understood it when they explained it, it allows them to sell to themselves basically.
Essentially,
so if I'm the company, I might buy 15 cases of beverage X, and I have that in storage on site.
In your suite.
And then I sell to myself.
On site at the stadium.
On site in your storage area.
Got it.
So they operate at, like Ryan said, like as a mini
liquor store
to themselves.
They can sell it to.
So they buy it at storage, and then they're like, okay, we're selling to McGuire Industries.
Mm-hmm.
They then sell that to them. So they function as sort of a mini liquor store.
Got it.
Within their own setup.
Okay.
Well, what we know
is
in order to operate like they're operating at Smith Park at the Delta Center and other stadium type things, hotel type things,
they would need a packaging license. They've made that observation and request to staff. We said we'd bring it to you. And if you're okay with that, we'll be bringing that for an actual vote in the next few months.
And how many suites are they going to have?
That I don't know.
I don't know.
I wish we had Ty here. He would know.
He would probably know that off.
Brad, you don't know, do you?
Let's go have another
We can find
now.
Out. We have a daybreak meeting tomorrow morning.
The grass is in,
we can
so
find
we get
it?
Another time
yeah.
for a good tour.
Yeah.
Did you all notice Xander Green on the outside of the building?
Yes.
Yes. Their insulation happens to be Xander Green.
The right shade of green.
So we'll work with them to get another tour set up because it looks very different.
The grass is in. That's huge because they said they wanted it in before Halloween.
But they wanted it in by the 15th of October.
That's today.
And the weather held out just in time. Now they got the sod down. It'll get a nice water in the next couple of days.
And
it'll
get really cold.
It's perfect.
So when did it go in? What day specifically?
Monday.
Monday.
Yesterday.
Just,
I think
wow.
today.
Yeah, I think
yeah,
today was the wrap up.
Which means the grass is on track.
Like
so things are,
cool. I'd
which
love to.
The good weather has been very helpful. And now it's all going to turn soft tomorrow. But the grass is on track.
So that gives you a little bit deeper dive in some of the things that are in Title V that you guys have, I know, been getting some questions about and how it kind of relates into the bigger picture of code. Any other questions or sections that you guys have questions about? Or?
That was really great. Thank you.
Okay.
I agree with Patrick's request to get some more information going forward about, you know, we've heard from several residents. I'm just going to say it about a certain business. And every correspondence I've received has been negative. It's been concerned.
And you guys have heard a lot about
that.
We have another shop
you know,
that we've also gotten concerns and questions about. So we can definitely dig into it and see where you guys want to take it and what kind of timeline you want to put it on.
Yeah,
that'll
be good. Bring us the. I mean, we've got 10 different types of licenses right now that apply to this, and
so
if the. Packaging license?
Mm-hmm.
That's what it's called.
It's kind of a weird thing. And when you read it, it like says like for hotels.
It feels really weird.
Yeah.
That's
but
why
this
we
is the mechanism that the state has established for places like this.
Yeah, this is how the Maverick Center, how the Delta Center, how the current V-State, that's the license they all operate under for that.
Yep.
So we'll get those changes drafted. You'll see those in an upcoming meeting for discussion.
What did you say?
I said the Marriott Center doesn't do it.
I know, but now they sell Coke.
Close enough, same thing.
Who needs a liquor license when you haven't been growing? So that's what I want to know. That's my Okay, unless there's anything else, we are finished a few minutes early.
No.
So before I ask for a motion to adjourn, I will just point out that since we are finished a few minutes early, take the time to, you know, get together. Let's get in there. And start definitely on time because we expect we'll probably have I don't know how many people are in there yet, but we'll have people
we'll have
tonight.
Sense.
So that'd be great. Okay.
Sounds good.
Okay. Can I get a motion to adjourn?
So second.
All right. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned. Thank you.